I wish to speak today, as briefly as I can, about what are referred to in the Catechism as the six commandments of the Church. I will not speak at great length, I trust, although that may be a matter of perspective. The first commandment obligates us to keep the Sundays and the holy days. There are six holy days of obligation, as you know. One of them will come up very soon on the 1st of November. And I remind you in advance that we will have Mass here at noon or around noon. I'll work this out and announce the final time of this Mass next week. But it will be on a Monday this year, the 1st, and therefore it will have to be at this time of day. I will have to continue on to Louisville for an evening Mass. With regard to the Sunday and the Holy Day obligation, I have observed, as practically all priests who have kept to the traditions, that many people do not think of their holy day obligation as of an equal gravity. And I'm here to remind you that you should not work on holy days if you can get out of it. And you should do no shopping on holy days any more than you should on Sunday. And sometimes this is a sacrifice, but I have not been able to figure out what the sacrifice is of not working on any day. Of course, when you make money at it, I guess there's a certain sport in that. But the law requires that if you can avoid the work on a holy day, that you not do it, as on Sunday. Some people have to work on Sunday. And if you have your own business, you should close it down. You may not, again, be able to do this. The financial situation being what it is. But the principle must not be lost. And we, if anyone, must maintain the tradition and the example. And if you can avoid doing work that pertains to your business, for instance, in the home, you should forego that. Some people, I know, are inclined to catch up with their paperwork on a Sunday. Well, that is not supposed to be. The work that pertains to your livelihood, you're supposed not to do on a Sunday. This is your way of indicating that you trust that God will take care of you. And if He wants to let you do with less, you have to indicate to Him you're willing. Sometimes farmers have a hard time staying out of the field, especially when the weather reports are threatening. Well, we priests are supposed to be understanding, but we're supposed also to strongly recommend that if a farmer thinks he's going to have to work on a Sunday, he should take the trouble of referring the matter to the priest, because the priest is a third party or another party, and the priest might ask him a few questions. He might say, well, did you work, or are you going to work on Saturday? I've heard of farmers going shopping or going to an auction on Saturday, and then they have to work on Sunday. Well, that is against the whole spirit of the thing. With regard to confessing one's sins once a year, this law binds only in a case where there is a mortal sin or are mortal sins. One never has to go to confession if he does not or has not committed a mortal sin. But But it's surely a sign that a person doesn't have great zeal either for this sacrament or for the grace of God if he goes only once a year, even if he's not conscious of serious sins. And all priests would say that if you don't go to confession for a long time, you are bound, you're doomed, rather, to fall into serious sin. You need the graces of this sacrament. You need the penance of it for your venial sins. And you need to have to go before the priest and tell your sins and therefore to examine your conscience in preparation for that act. And that is all beneficial. But most of all, you need the grace of the sacrament in order to avoid sin. Some people wouldn't treat their car the way they treat their souls. And all these things you must instruct your children. Another of the commandments is that one must receive Holy Communion during the Easter season. And I venture to wager that a number of you who have been Catholics for a long time, maybe all your lives, could not tell me what the Easter season is. I'm going to tell you so that you'll know forever. From the first Sunday of Lent to Trinity Sunday, which is the Sunday after Pentecost, and Pentecost is the 50th day after Easter, and therefore you have about 97 days to make your Easter, one communion. Some people have the idea that you have to single out a certain communion. Now, this is my communion for the Easter season. Well, if you go to communion often, you don't have to specify anyone. This is for people who are just hanging into the church, just barely there. And if you do not go to communion but once a year, you're also hanging out. Inexcusable. The reason the law is there is not only to get you to go to communion at least once a year, but in order that we may know whether you're a Catholic or not, or want to be. And if a person doesn't make his Easter, we presume he doesn't care. And if he dies, we do not have a Catholic burial. There is no funeral mass for him. We might go to the funeral home and say a few prayers in desperate hope, but there will be no funeral mass for anyone who we know has not made his Easter duty. That's the law. Then there is this most important matter of the laws of the church concerning holy matrimony. This is the sixth commandment. I'm leaving out mention of the fast and abstinent laws, and I'm leaving out the matter of contributing to the support of the church, which we'll speak of at another time. My favorite subject. But we will talk about today the laws of the church concerning marriage. I want you to know, my dear people, that there is great wisdom in these laws. There's nothing capricious, nor is there anything antagonistic about the laws of the church. They are all framed with a recognition of the holiness of this sacrament and the gravity of it and the need that we have for not only the grace of the sacrament but also for the directives that the laws contain. We all ought to remember, and anyone who's been married a little while doesn't have to be told, but we all ought to remember for the sake of our children that marriage is not for children. It is grown-up and heady business. And whenever you let your children go out on dates, remember the dates, the social activity pertaining to that kind of thing, is focused in the direction of marriage, which means that when you begin to let your children go out socially, they already should have an attitude toward marriage. And you should have drilled into their minds how you regard the matter. And if you're not clear on it, they will not be. And if you're not resolute, you can expect trouble or sad, sad disappointment. Now let me state these principles. I remind you that marriage is holy and the laws are holy, and they are infinitely wise. The church claims jurisdiction over the marriage of Catholics, which is to say that Catholics who do not conform to these laws risk invalidity of the relationship. The church does not disqualify the marriage of non-Catholics. Some people have the idea that the church considers non-Catholic people to be living in sin because they're out of the church. They may be in sin because they're out of the church, but you can marry civilly and be in sin. The church recognizes all marriages which conform to the civil law, so long as the two people are free to marry. If there has been a previous marriage, of course, and a divorce, then, of course, there's no marriage. So keep those two principles in mind. If it is a Catholic, however, he must conform to the laws of the church if he hopes that his marriage will be valid and that his children will be recognized by the church as legitimate. Now, this is another very important principle. There is no possibility of an annulment for a sacramental marriage. A sacramental marriage is one in which both parties have received baptism, whether in the Catholic Church or in any other Protestant group. If the person has received baptism and marries a baptized person, that is called a sacramental marriage. And in respect to marriages, the church presumes the validity of the baptism of non-Catholic people. With respect to non-sacramental marriages, it is possible that they be annulled in order that one or the other party of this relationship might enter the Catholic Church for the sake of his salvation. And having entered the church through baptism, he may contract marriage according to the church's laws. In other words, a non-sacramental marriage can be annulled for the sake of the faith. These are called the Pauline and Petrine privileges after the apostles, Saints Peter and Paul. Now, when we talk about the annulment of a marriage, remember, we don't talk about, you know, signing a little form and dropping it in a mailbox. It's not quite that simple. So if any of you is planning to enter into a marriage which is nullifiable, I warn you that it is not a surefire thing and it is not easy. Another point, most important, if the priest does not have the faculties, the proper delegation from the church to perform the marriage is invalid. And it is partially because of such a law as this that I entered the Order of St. John. And it is for that reason that I would not do as many priests in the traditionalist effort are doing, simply operate on one's own, because no faculties for marriage are granted through the church under those circumstances. The Order of St. John may grant its chaplains and does grant its chaplains and priests who serve as chaplains for its knights and ladies, these faculties, no matter what the local chanceries say, but only for Catholics. We have no right to marry those who are not Catholic. As you know, in the dioceses, the bishops may grant dispensations for Catholics to marry non-Catholic people, even non-baptized non-Catholics. But we have no such privileges and no source for such dispensations. Remember this, regardless of public sentiment or court declarations or numerous children or the threat of embarrassment or long periods of time, no power on earth, neither the church nor any court nor any state can absolve a sacramental marriage. To repeat, sacramental marriage is one in which both parties are baptized. And you can pay all the priests you want and all the judges and all the lawyers to your heart's content, get as many declarations as you wish. If you have married properly, you are married no matter what happens. No matter if your husband or wife has gone totally insane. You shouldn't look at each other when I say that. If you've lost your husband in war, or if he's just wandered off somewhere, you do not know where, haven't heard of him for years, or if he's just nothing but a drunken sot, if he beats up on you, if you've had to get the sheriff to take him away, he's still your husband. And if you don't like that, girls or young men, if you don't want to enter into this kind of relationship, nobody's making you. You're free as a bird. You do not have to marry anybody if you don't want to. Some say you ought not to. I don't say that. I say if you're going to get married, keep the law. Find out what it is and adhere to it strictly. But find someone who will also keep it with you. And if you find someone that has no regard for the church, has no regard for these presumptions of the church, who doesn't have much religion, or you do not know what kind of religion, you are asking for trouble. Do not expect him to keep the laws you're bound by, because he will not do it. And you're a fool to expect him to. If you have any sense, and this we say for the benefit of you parents, but if you young people have any sense, you will formulate your notion about marriage early. And when you set about finding someone, you will lay it down very clearly from the start. If you get interested in me, these are the laws. And I'm going to keep them. And if you are interested in me, you'll have to keep them also. I tell you at the start, so that if you're not interested in this kind of thing, I'll see you later, baby. And if you'll lay this out this way and mean it, then you'll find someone with some backbone and some character, someone whom you could risk your life with. Someone who will listen to the priest when he says what the doctrine of the church is and why he should be a Catholic. But what do? They enter into these ridiculous, baseless relationships, and then when they go on the rocks, then they come to the priest and they want the priest to patch it all up for them, or to get all kinds of dispensations and make all kinds of corrections. And when we say we can't do it, then we're the bad guys. And that's what I'm telling you now. If you make your bed, You'll have to sleep in it. And I say this to you. If you young people, if you don't want to keep these laws, you don't have to. You can do as you please. And I want to insist on that. You can do whatever you wish with regard to marriage, as you can do whatever you wish with regard to the whole moral law. But you can also go to hell. And if you think you're going to get more wise than the church, if you think you're going to in-run the thing, if you think you're going to find out something that has not been thought of, I'm here to tell you, you're doomed to failure and to bitter disappointment. You'll not do it. I've been in the priesthood long enough to hear practically every kind of instance and every kind of effort. And I usually end up by saying, I'm sorry. I cannot do a thing for you. And I regret it. I don't say, I told you so. I don't say, tough. I just say, I grieve for you, but I cannot reach you. You put yourself beyond the reach of the church, and that's it. Now, the reason we say all these things to you now is because, parents, you must school your children to think along these lines. Don't wait until they're 18 or 19, because by then they already have their own mind about these things. And I'm not suggesting that you can control it in any way, no matter when you start. But you should already, as I have said, you should start educating them along these lines before they begin to go out socially. It often happens that the person marries the very first person he ever dated. They simply fall in love at a young age and it lasts. Or it looks like it's going to. And some would, after, if they listen to the laws of the church, after they listen to them, they say, this is just too much. Well, I will say to them what the warden said to the man sitting in front of his desk with numbers written across his garb. The warden said, well, you must remember 477402. You're not supposed to like it here. And I'm saying that marriage is not supposed to be just one endless picnic. It is supposed to be the way you save your souls. It's the way you serve Christ in the church. It's serious business. It's a vocation. And if you enter into marriage thinking that it is just a lark, or just you do it because you're in love, again, you're not serious enough nor mature enough to do it. But the church cannot look at marriage the way these people do, or the way the worldlings do, the way children do, the way the movies do, because it is not real. We're concerned with souls. We're concerned with the permanence and the holiness of this relationship. That's why the rules seem strict, because the rules of life are strict and the rules of salvation are strict. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost.